Hello and welcome to another episode of Theology in the Raw. I am here with my wife, Chris Sprinkle, and we are going to do a joint episode on parenting in the raw. So what I did is I asked several of my Patreon supporters, actually I asked all my Patreon supporters to ask a bunch of questions that are parenting specific. Now, they don't have to be parents. They can be single people, aspiring parents, former parents, or just people who have questions about maybe their own parents. So anything parental related was fair game. So they sent in a bunch of questions. And I got to admit, when I got these questions, I was like, oh no, here we go. Like they, I titled it Parenting in the Raw, and they asked some really raw questions. And so how do you feel about that, Chris? These raw questions?
Yeah, a little nervous.
Okay, so we'll see how honest we are. I mean, I told my wife, I said, hey, look, yeah, we can edit this out. If we start going down a road, we're like, you know what? I don't know if I want, you know, 5,000 people listening to what we're talking about here. Then we can always edit it out. But I mean, I said that, but I don't think I'm going to do any editing, quite honestly. So
yeah, we'll just, and we didn't really get a chance to talk these over. We both read them.
So I just emailed these questions to my wife as she was up in her office. And I said, all right, we're going to do a podcast here in a few minutes. So just read over them. And here we are in my basement. And yeah, we did not actually talk through how we're going to answer these. Now, let me just say up front, too, to y'all and also to my wife, like we may actually disagree on some stuff here, which is totally fine. Because if you think that parents agree across the board on everything, then that's fake parenting. That's not parenting in the raw. So I, you know, as I was looking through these, though, I think we're going to have similar perspectives on most of them, at least. So should we jump in?
Yeah.
Do you have any final words of wisdom or anything before we jump in?
No.
Well, I guess, let me say this, though. Parenting is not for the faint-hearted. And there's few nights when we go to bed at night thinking, you know what? We really nailed it today. Totally perfect parents today. We did everything we should have done. So, like, this is not... So what we're going to say in response to these questions is not necessarily prescriptive. I mean, if I feel really strongly about something or you do too, we can say, you know what, man, I really think this is what parents should do in this situation. But for most of these questions, I'm like, man, I don't know. This is what we've kind of done. Maybe we've changed our view on some things, but we're in the journey trying to figure it out. We have kids 10, 12, 14, and 16, and we're in the middle of it. We're in the thick of it. So we are not here to say, here is what we have done right, and I need you all to follow exactly what we've done. We are not at all approaching this that way. That's why we called it Parenting in the Raw. This is really, we're right in the thick of it.
And I feel like as soon as you think that you have it and you did it well and you're like, we figured it out, is when it gets all mixed up, different changes in life, different situations, chapters, and all of a sudden you're back to feeling like, I do not know what I'm doing. I would say one of the things that we have always done from the time we had little kids is we were always picking people's brains. Yeah. So I feel like anytime there is other parents, we just say, what do you do about this? And not for the reason that we would do exactly what they do, but just to find out how are people doing it. And I think both of us are big question askers. For those of you who really do know us, you would probably affirm that. And so I have always loved asking people questions like, what do you do about this? And how did you take care of this? So that was, that was one thing just up front. So I feel like it's always changing. And it's never will be the same and work for one kid. Everything doesn't work the same for each kid. And so
one of the things that we actually, it's kind of humorous though. Should I say this?
Yes. You better say
now. Well, every now and then we'll meet somebody that's like, maybe they just had a kid, they're 6 months old, or maybe they haven't even had a kid yet, but they have like their whole future parenting kind of laid out and they're really confident in, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're not going to do that. Da, 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 boom, boom. This schooling, that schooling. This is, and it's like, oh yeah. We kind of look at each other like,
well, we did that too, though. We were always like, oh, we'll never let our kids do this.
We were that parent?
Yeah, of course.
That's terrible.
Everyone would be lying if they didn't admit that. So yes, I feel like you start off by your ideal and then you realize, none of that works.
That standard just keeps coming down and down. Yeah. If I was a parent, I would do that, Anyway, well, let's jump in and maybe we will kind of discuss not only the questions that are thrown at us, but maybe some, underlying principles that are more general. So
I guess we could just start by saying one thing, like, just is that I think you and I would both agree and say that we just love parenting. So, yeah. Like, we just have just really enjoyed it. I've never been someone that has, like, needed a lot of me time. And so feeling like, oh, I just need a break from the kids. Probably never have heard me say that. And no. It's not like I don't cover that up. It's just I don't really feel like that. We really love parenting. I love trying to figure out how it can work and how we can make it better and how we can make our family better. And so I think it's just like countless hours of just really trying our absolute best as to trying to figure out how to parent them well and how to love them well and how to be examples and just build and hold really strong relationships with them. So I feel like it's not easy and it's not quick. I just feel like, I mean, just hours and hours and hours of just working through figuring it out. So yeah. I think just, you know, I just wanted to say that first.
And I would say that's not really normal though, right? Like most women that I know, most mothers would say that they do need some alone time, would you
say?
Yeah,
and
like,
it's not wrong. It's not, it's, right. I mean,
you're just saying that this is the way you're wired. Like you think through this stuff like all day long and enjoy it. And
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into the first one. Since this is in the raw, this is the first question. I'm wondering if you could address the issues of body image, modesty, etc. What do you teach your kids about their bodies? Do you have a more relaxed or conservative approach to family members being undressed around each other, such as while bathing or other contexts in the home? Do you have rules or guidelines for your kids about what kinds of clothes they must wear in public? Do you have thoughts on how to encourage kids through their words, examples to grow up, hopefully being comfortable in their own skin, having healthy body image, stewarding their bodies in a holy way, etc.? I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how different approaches could affect children in positive or negative ways. I realize that different cultures and different families can have widely varying approaches to these things. This is a super good question. And we have three daughters, two are teenagers, one's a preteen, about to be a teenager, and a 10-year-old son. And so this is a very live and a very real day-to-day conversation for us. Do you want to jump in here and take a stab at it? I mean, I'll say just on a 30,000-foot level, yeah, this is a ongoing conversation, even if it's not explicit. I mean, sometimes talking about clothing or body image and stuff, it's not necessarily explicit, but it can be just in offhanded comments you make, you know? And I would say our girls are just like any other girl as a teenager. I mean, thinking through the way they look and their bodies, especially as they're changing, I mean, is probably it's a constant thing on their mind. Would you agree with that? I mean,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, we care about what our kids look like, how they dress. As I'm thinking, are we relaxed or conservative? Well, most of our parenting is probably always going to be more relaxed. So that's more, but that can go in many different ways. I think by the time they become teenagers and they're wanting to dress how they want to dress, or I think by that point, hopefully you've invested a lot in them and talked enough to them to be able to now the conversations, instead of the conversations being do's and don'ts, but more being conversations of, well, let's talk about that. Let's see, you know, how do you think this is, what is this portraying? What is this saying to others if you're looking this way? So I think we haven't had a lot of, like, no, you cannot wear skirts, you know, they have to go to your knees, or we haven't had rules like that. We don't tend in parenting to have rules like that, but it would be more,
but we do. There's been several times where we're like, no, that's too short or too tight or shows too much, right? I mean, we do.
Yeah. So like,
the modesty thing for me is I'm going to come back to this because I cut you off. But yeah. I think in terms of like that kind of clothes, not necessarily, but as far as revealing and what, that says, I think that's where we had been more. We're more like way more relaxed on the kinds of clothes just in general, or even styles or the whatever, but like in terms of how much is revealing.
Right.
And I feel like as a guy, I do bring, a perspective on that, but I cut you off.
Well, I would just say it's more of a conversation like you are not wearing that out of the house. You know, maybe if after back and forth of not agreeing on that, you know, at the end we would put our foot down and say, yep, that's just not something that you know, you're going to wear. But I think there's conversations with that. In the end, I feel like when it's me and the girls and the last question I always tell them is, well, go ask Dad and see if what he thinks, what he sees, first thing he sees when he sees that. Usually, you know, if you're like, oh yeah, all I see is chest or whatever it is, then that's kind of like a final say. So, but I think the most important thing, I mean, I just think as they're, you know, from teenager leaving the house, is that's when you're wanting to start having conversations with them rather than, strict rules. And so, I feel like we try to do that. Like, why are you wanting to wear something where your belly is showing? Like, why is that? You know, a lot of times the answer is that's because everyone is wearing that. And, I think in the end, you know, it's like, well, not everyone is, but the people that you're referring to is, and what are they usually trying to, why are they trying to show?
And I've tried to instill just a very honest, evaluation of teenage boys. Like, I'm like, look, I was a morally good kid when I was a teenager, and yet I was still a teenage boy. They can go to church 10 times a week. They want to have sex. They are probably struggling with porn at a young age. And I said, look, if you wear, you know, really tight pants, many guys are going to be staring at your butt and they are going to want to have sex with you. Just put it flat out. Like, that's just the truth of it. And so I don't want to be like, I'm not trying to be like a prude or like, oh, you know, like hyper modesty or whatever. I'm just like, you know, I want them to be honest. Like, if you wear that, I'm going to let you know, this is how guys are going to be looking at you, and this is what they're going to be thinking, and this is what they're going to want to do with you. Do you still want to wear that? And for, you know, even like the belly thing, like, there's certain, I'm just from a guy's perspective. Oh, sorry. I guess I got to say heterosexual guy. I mean, just from a heterosexual guy's perspective, like, there are certain types of clothing that I'm like, you know what? Yeah, that's probably not going to attract a lot of attention. And other types of clothing, I'm like, you know what? That you may see that is not sexual at all, but it's going to attract all kinds of attention. I mean, I know it's the big discussion is always like yoga pants, you know, it's like, look, I'm just going to tell you, if you're wearing yoga pants and you have, I don't know how to say it, but I mean, if you have a short shirt and you have a butt that is going to attract guys, they are going to be staring at that nonstop. I remember sitting in a Starbucks. I used to work at Starbucks when I was in Simi Valley, and I used to go in there every day, and I'd sit there and work on my computer. And there was specifically one trainer, gym trainer, that would come in every day with yoga pants, not every single day. And she had a body, right? And I remember sitting there as she walked up and took the order. The rows of guys were visibly just, I mean, falling over their, like, one guy was just like visibly like, oh my God. Oh yeah. Oh. And he was just like, and I'm like, I'm looking around all the guys. There wasn't a single guy there. I'm talking guys studying their Bibles, pastors preparing sermons. It doesn't matter. The entire room was just staring and groping her with their eyes. And I'm like, that's just those are just the facts. Like, it's not, and I'll even say, like, they need to own that. I'm not saying it's the woman's fault for doing that. I'm just saying these are the facts. Like, if you dress in certain ways, guys will be groping you with their eyes. And when I tell my daughters that, they're like, ew, like they're like, and I think that's a good sign to like, no, I don't want that. So I don't know. I think just being like super honest with the way the world is and how they want people to respond to them in their minds, even, you know. So,
well, you took each girl out on their own and tell them what you did.
I just said, look,
you showed them pictures and stuff, right?
Yeah, we actually scrolled. I think I typed in sexy girl or something in Google and just went through images maybe not even say like cute girl or something, and just went through and explained to them, like, yeah, this is. Like, what do you think when you see this girl? And they're like, oh, seductive, you know? And there's just certain things that do create a more seductive presentation. And I said, okay, so if you have that presentation, here is what 95% of church-going heterosexual guys and, you know, 99% of it's probably the same across the board. Like, here is what is going to be going inside of them when they see you. Like, how do you feel about that? And I think having that honest conversation early on, too, where they... I don't know. And our girls weren't like, oh, good. I want them. They were like, no, like turned off by that, yeah. You know? So, because that's the goal. I don't want them to be like, oh, my dad just, you know, doesn't want me to wear this. Like, I want them to desire, the ultimate goal is that they would desire to dress in a way that truly is God-honoring and, you know, isn't causing, so I don't want to put the blame on the girl who's dressing the way she is. The blame is on the guy who's not disciplining himself. But we also have to be real with just the facts. Here is the world that we are growing up in.
Yeah. And then I had a thought, we don't have rules about like what you have to wear to church or, you know, skirts only or those kind of things. Cause I feel like those are just rules for the sake of rules. And neither of us are big on that. There's gotta be a reason for it rather than just a preference. So, like I know one of our daughters has a friend who can only wear skirts out in public and she talks about is how she can't wait to leave the house. And because all she wants to do is wear jeans out in public. And I just think it's so sad because like that becomes her like goal, what she can't wait and her focus. And I just don't want, or we don't want like clothing and body image to be the focus. So whenever there's something that's too strong or too talked about, then that is what they talk about so much. And so, I'm looking at body image here on the question too. And that's definitely a hard one. I think hard when you have teenage girls that, they want to look like everybody else or they care about what their body looks like. And I think, we just always encourage them about health. I love health and love studying health. And so we've always, done a lot of work with just teaching them to eat really healthy. And so I think when conversations come up where someone's not feeling skinny or feeling like, you know, they're the biggest one in the family or any of those kind of things, we just always try to point them towards like, well, like, do you feel healthy? And then usually the answer is no. So then, well, what are you eating? What are you not doing? Are you exercising? Let's focus on that so that it's not just how you look, but how healthy are you? Because I talked to them a lot about like you can be so skinny and be on your deathbed and not healthy. So we want strong bodies.
Or maybe not super skinny, but still eating healthy. And some bodies are different, you know?
Yeah.
I think going back to the clothing thing too, I think we try to be more relaxed in clothing that really isn't in the modesty category. Even like if they wanted to get multiple piercings or if wear all black or dye their hair or something. I mean, none of our kids really wanted to dye their hair, but I mean, I think if we give leeway on stuff that really isn't, to me, doesn't really matter. I don't know. I mean, and they're too young to get a tattoo, but if they, you know, whatever they wanted to, it's like, to me, all those things are like, I want to give a lot of grace and freedom in that. So when it does come to more modesty issues, I can say, look, you know that we're lenient. We're not strict parents on this stuff. But when it comes to modesty, we're dealing with more moral categories now. Whereas the other stuff is just not moral. I mean, they could shave their head if they want to do, and they wouldn't. But I mean, it's like, that's not the hill I want to die on.
So what I tell them is that anything permanent or anything visibly permanent or that could leave a scar or anything that's somewhere visible, they have to wait till like, I would say, leave the house and make your own decisions with that. So like one of our daughters wanted a nose ring, which I think nose rings can look really great. But also if you decide you don't want it anymore, you're going to have a scar on your nose. And so just in their young years where they, you know, they just are so convinced by the person sitting next to them, getting a nose, you know, if she decides to get a nose ring as she gets older and she's really thought about it for many years, I'd be all for it. So anything permanent, I mean, they all talk about different tattoos they want to get and everything, which is fine as long as they've thought really like multiple years on it. And I want them at least old enough to where they're not in like, 14, 15 years old where they're going to change their mind in the next minute. So
teenage girls change their mind.
Yeah.
Oh man. I got more to say, but why don't we keep going? Cause there's so many other questions here. Okay. I'm really looking forward to this episode.
I thought you were reading it. Sorry.
Oh no.
Go ahead.
My wife and I have really tried to have continuous open age appropriate continuous, open, age-appropriate dialogue about reproduction and sex with our three kids who are 13, 10, and 8. The topics of homosexuality, transgender, et cetera, has rarely come up. Can you speak to how to approach this conversation in a healthy way? Let me start by saying for us, it's a little bit unique given the ministry that I have, that I've got sex books lying around the house, and I give seminars and talks. If I get asked to preach a sermon at a church, it's usually on sexuality and gender. So our kids are kind of used to it, but I mean, it's kind of like, I'm curious how we would have done it if this wasn't my primary ministry, but overall, I mean, I think, I would be a huge advocate of starting very early and making it very just normal, not taboo, but just talking about it, sex and stuff, in a way that doesn't make it kind of a weird conversation. But Chris, you've done an amazing job at that, more than I have. So do you have any thoughts?
Well, it makes me immediately think the very first time I remember thinking, oh man, this is the first time we're seeing it, was we were at the beach. We were living in California. So it must have been, we've been here for 5 years. I mean, maybe like 8 years ago. So our oldest is 16. So it'd make her eight. So let's say eight. I remember we were at the beach and we saw a wedding of two brides, and it was two dresses, and we were sitting there watching, and next thing you know, they're like, wait, why is there two wedding dresses? You know? And so that was like our very first encounter, and then with the kids. And then not too long after that, we were sitting at, it must have been months or so, that where we were sitting at a restaurant and we saw two boys kissing. So that was 8 years old. And I remember right then and there, and this was before you even started. I mean, maybe were you writing?
I might
people?
Have just started maybe like just blogging start- about it.
Yeah. So, and I remember thinking, oh, I want to have these first conversations with them. I want to talk, I didn't rush them off from the beach and say, oh, don't look and everything. I was like, let's sit here and watch this. Let's see how this is done. Because I knew if the world is heading this way, I'm not going to like not try to talk to the kids about it. I want to be the first one talking to them about it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the very first thing is, I think we, and from then on, it was just, yeah, what did you notice? Did you notice those two girls holding hands? What do you think of that? Or, you know, and just open conversations from the very beginning. But at the same time, we have open conversations with the kids about everything. So it's kind of, we don't really have, I mean, almost probably to a fault, sometimes we feel like, oh, maybe we shared too much or we've talked too much. But I would rather have really close relationships with the kids where they feel like they can ask us anything. And I really do think so. I don't think there's not anything that they don't ask. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I think too young, if I'm thinking about kids 13, 10, and 8, and if you don't feel like it's really rarely come up, I'll tell you, I'm sure that they've already talked about it or with other people, or they have had thoughts, or their curiosity has already hit. So right now at this time in this age, mm-hmm. it's never too early. I mean,
yeah. And yeah, there's always age appropriate ways to do it, you know, and I think you just have to navigate that. And I've tried to, especially through the research and ministry I've been engaged in, I've really tried to take the same kind of grace truth paradigm and, you know, lead our kids in that way, because like some kids will be more naturally more judgmental or pharisaical, right? And they're going to look at that and have kind of the ew or ooh, that's wrong, you know. And it's like, I want to kind of correct that kind of reaction, you know. I want them to see all people as equally in need of Jesus, you know. At the same time, if they're kind of just overly permissive just in general, or just like, you know, I don't want to, you know, say anything or even think anything that's critical of another way of life, I'm like, well, that's not really a Christian approach either. So trying to, you know, figure out which way they lean and try to navigate a healthy grace truth perspective on that. So, I remember one time, do you remember this? We're at the water park several years ago, and there was a man in a bikini or something, right? And I remember Kaylier, you know, they were staring, they had kind of a negative reaction, but it's like, you know, I want them to say, wow, that person I bet they really need Jesus, you know? And not just assuming just because the man was in a dress, he needs Jesus, but probably does, right? Just like we all do. So I want to kind of discourage?
Don't know that word.
You're not going to help me out here. All right. I want to discourage kind of having that maybe a pharisaical, judgmental kind of reaction rather than a gracious reaction while maintaining a firm commitment to the truth. And yeah, it's super hard. It's not easy with kids.
So yeah, so I would say start talking to them about it and just start asking questions rather than coming out and saying, you know, let's see what the Bible says about this, but just ask questions like, what have you guys noticed? What do you see if they're in school? What do you see in your schools? Do you ever have our kids talking about this? I just think at the beginning, just without giving a parental answer for everything, just really listening and hearing where they're coming from. Because when you know where they're coming from, then you can know how to respond. I think a lot of times as parents, we already know the right answer and we just want to teach it to them. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't always work. And so, yeah, I would just say if you haven't talked to them yet, 13, 10, and 8, then spend some time just asking questions, asking them what they think of it and what other kids are saying, what other kids think, and then just be a listener for a little while. And then I think that a lot of times fosters into mm-hmm. questions that they would maybe ask you if they feel like you're safe or you feel like – I think because also, too, we were talking with a friend of ours last year, I think it was, and I forget the exact situation, but I remember their daughter was a teenager and was all of a sudden like standing up for like kids in her school that were, having different struggles, whether it was homosexuality or transgender or thing. And the parent was just shocked because she was like, why are you standing up for him? And it was almost like she felt like this, like she didn't want like the parents. So she already knew her parents' view and she didn't want her parents just saying like negative things about it. And I thought, if you have a safe relationship with your kids and they know that you're not going to just put their friends down or the people down, then they'll feel more open to talk about it rather than to just say, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, that's the thing. Like the ultimate goal. I mean, your kids are thinking what they're thinking. They have questions that they have questions about. They will choose to talk to you honestly about that if they know that you're a safe person to talk to. It's not going to come right out and judge them, but it's actually going to listen to them. So, yeah, like even in that situation, it's like, you know, it's almost like the parent interpreted them as standing up for their friends as like, you know, being, I don't know, theologically affirming, whatever. When it's like the kid was just doing something right? I mean, kids were being bullied or being made fun of, and she stood up for them. That's like awesome, you know? But because in this specific topic, they hadn't had a kind of an open conversation already. It was kind of going in a direction where, you know, where the kid didn't seem to, you know, be able to trust their parents as much as they should have. I think they ended up working it out and ended up being great. But yeah, I think just being like at the end of the day, I want my kids to know that they can talk to me about anything. There's not a single thing they're struggling with or have questions about that I'm going to, you know, look at them like, oh, wow, you know, and even have the slightest judgmental mentality, even though I might be able to give them some guidance that they may not want to, you know, they may not agree with, whatever. They know that they can just talk to us about anything. I think with all these questions, that's kind of the foundational thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you being the first person that talks to them about it opens up the door for them coming back to you. Mm-hmm. If they've already talked about certain topics with like friends for long periods of time, it's going to be more awkward and harder for them to come talk to you. So that was always our approach, is let's be the first ones. Even with like dating and stuff, I always think about that. I mean, none of our kids are dating anybody or anything, but I always, I would love to be the first one that they would come to with a crush or with, you know, if they're thinking about someone. So I, you know, periodically just ask them like if they are thinking anybody's cute or if they're interested in anybody. And that way it's more of a normal conversation rather than the first time they have to admit to the family that mm-hmm. they like someone, which I just don't want that to be. And so it's finding the balance. You don't want to start too soon where it's like putting thoughts into their minds. But, you know, I mean, we always talk along Mm-hmm. This is more dating, but about, you know, when the time is right, I'll be so excited for you. And if when the person is good, we can't wait to celebrate with you. Mm-hmm. So anyways, just being the first to have conversations with them about different topics.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one. There's three questions related to spanking, grace-based parenting and discipline and rules versus punishment and all these things. I won't read them word for word. But well, one person did say, you know, as someone who believes in nonviolence, what is your take on spanking as a form of discipline? Mm-hmm. So do you want me to lead with this one, or do you want to go? Or
yeah, you can.
We've kind of shifted. I mean,
yeah, I think this is one of the hardest like answers for us, because we definitely have changed. If I were to do it all over again, here's the one.
So for us, I mean, yeah, we spanked. We spanked our kids when they were young. And for us, given the environment we grew up in, we didn't even question it. It was almost like immoral not to spank, right? I mean, both of us, it wasn't even like, oh my gosh. Like, and I feel like in our environment, it was like if our kid was just even out of hand a little bit and people were kind of waiting, you know, when are you going to spank them? You know, like, so we didn't really reflect on it. And this is long before I even got into nonviolence. So this was, you know, let's see, I wrote that book and 2012, came out in 2013. I would say it's probably 2010, 2011 when I even started thinking about nonviolence. But even then, it's almost like for a few years, I didn't even apply it to this question. I didn't even think about it. It wasn't like, if you've read my book, Fight, I don't have a section on there on spanking or corporeal punishment.
Corporal.
Yeah. How come I can't say that? Corporal.
Corporal.
Funny. Corporal. What's it?
Yeah.
You say it.
Corporal.
Golly, I think it's easier said than done. So it wasn't until the last few years when, I mean, and it's kind of I don't want to say it's a cop out, but we're kind of past the age of spanking anyway. So we haven't really, maybe at the tail end of Cody. I mean, he was a good kid.
I don't think Cody's had a spanking.
He had a couple, but yeah.
Maybe one or two.
So our kids, yeah, some of our kids, you know, how do I say it? Required, not required, because I'd nullify what we're saying, but.
Was a little more challenging.
But other ones, like, we can just look at them and say, you shouldn't have done that. And they kind of burst out crying and say, I'm so sorry. And write us a card and give us, like, money and, you know, to because they feel so bad. So I would lean away from spanking now. I'm not sure if I'm 100% against it, though. Are you? Would you say you are?
I would not be able to.
Would you say for yourself or for just as a Christian principle?
Yeah, I just it doesn't feel right.
So you're basing your theology on feelings?
Yes. Whatever you want it to be. No, I feel like there's a lot of other means that could be a lot more effective. I feel like I'm like with our one daughter that was more challenging, I don't even think giving her more spankings even worked or helped. I mean, it didn't do, you know, that's what she remembers. She remembers a lot of that, of spanking. And I just think, I'm not convinced that that is the best method. I think it's very easy to cross the line when you're mad. And as much as we try incredibly hard and tried to not spank while you're angry, the fact is I'm sure everyone could admit this, you probably do it six times out of 10, and you know, unless you're like really cooling down. And so I just think that that's such a, it's such a scary method of when you're mad to just do a quick.
Yeah, I always felt bad about that. Cause, and even if you look at like, say spanking as a non-punitive discipline, versus a punitive, like, is it a punishment for a wrong they did or a form of directing them onto the right path? Like, I would now say that I think spanking as a form of punishment for a wrong they did is not teaching them good theology in a sense. Like, we believe that Jesus took 100% of our punishment. So if they're getting spanked as a form of punishment, we're teaching them through a physical act. I mean, again, this is stronger than just verbal teaching. This is actually building into them this idea that they need to atone for their sin, that the spanking, that Jesus's death wasn't enough, really. And that's where I started getting really guilty. And I can't even say I stopped right away, but I was like, man, if it's like, you did this wrong, you're getting spanked. And then I turn right around and now let's talk about the atoning work of Jesus. It's like, it doesn't, and they catch it. They see the contradiction there. But if it's, what about this? You have a one-year-old kid, and like when we lived in Scotland, they had and you UK listeners out there know what I'm talking about. Like, you know, they had the heaters.
Oh, yeah.
This is like, I don't know how the child safety code,
the
wall heaters that are like 1,000 degrees filled with hot water going through it. And when you have a one-year-old kid crawling around and they're about to touch the water heater and we'd redirect them. But then some of our kids, even at 1 year old, like, oh, if they're being redirected, they're going to go back stronger, you know? And I will say a slap on the hand as they were about to touch, I don't know, in that situation, like, again, it's not a punishment, but I'm trying to redirect them away from that. So I don't know how do you feel about that?
Well, that's a hard example, because if they just touch it once, they're not going to touch it again. That's so true. That's on their own. So it's kind of like,
so let them touch
this. Well, I probably would sit with them and have their hand go as close to it as possible. Like take their hand, go as close to about to and be teaching them hot. Now, if they
and
choose
say no,
to,
like keep saying no.
But show how hot it is, you know, it. And then if they touched it once, I know they're not going to do that. So that's a harder example.
Oh, shoot. We have to give another one.
But
that's why if it's like training, I don't know, yeah. I feel like there were situations, though, where I'm like, I can't, they're too young to reason or they're being unreasonable. And yeah, I don't want them to feel like they can just get away with what they want to do. Like, I think that's equally dangerous, right? Wouldn't you say? I mean, but
yeah.
Are you saying that there always is an alternative form of discipline that isn't corporeal?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say probably, as I'm thinking back, probably the hardest stage with the spanking and the disciplining is like the twos and threes when tantrums begin, right? So trying to think, like I was just in the store the other day and this little two-year-old is just screaming bloody murder up and down the aisles and just, I mean, everybody was commenting. Everyone was so annoyed. And I'm trying to think like that's a hard stage because there's no reasoning. There's no like, what are you going to do with them and stuff. And I think that's where like our life has to be so flexible enough to just leave the store. And
because like in that situation, we would have taken them to the bathroom and spanked them.
Yeah.
And if they did it again, we'd spank them again or take them out. And letting that go unchecked, wouldn't you agree, is also incredibly dangerous. Like, did the parent do anything or did they just pretend like it didn't exist?
Yeah, it's hard because it's like, you know, she probably needed to get her groceries and get out. I'm sure she was trying to go as fast as she can. And, so that is a hard thing. But I just don't know if the baby screams at you and you spank out of frustration and everybody knows that kind of screaming in your face, there's, you can't hold it. Like you can't be calm, like with the baby screaming at you. Like, so that's to be able to spank in a way that works with them is not helpful. I mean,
what do you do? Like, what would you tell that parent in an ideal situation for non-spanking? Would you say you just pick them up and leave? Or is there
I do think our kids are more, they can understand, they know exactly from the time, even 8 months, they know, like when you tell them, you know, like sit down and you'll get this ice cream, you know, and you show them to sit down, they'll be on their best behavior for something good. So I think at a very young age, like they're very aware. So I think on the reverse, you know, you can.
So in that situation though, like, what would you say, look at them and say, no, you stop. And of course the kid's just going to keep screaming.
Yeah. I would leave the store, go sit in the car, buckle them all up and say, you know, in a calm voice, we're going to go back in. And, I would probably say something like, I've been thinking about this. If we're going to go back in and shop, if you scream, then I'm going to take you home and give you a cold shower.
And really?
Yeah. Give him a cold shower.
Hose them off?
A freezing cold shower. And just, you know.
Is that okay? That's.
I don't think. Yeah, you're not doing it. I don't know. no, this is so hard.
No, I like hose them up.
But I think at 2 and 3 they can fully understand that. Oh boy, they, you know, so
you wouldn't do a positive reward like, hey, if you stop screaming, I will give you this candy or whatever.
I'm very big on positive reward or like positive reinforcement, but not on when they have you know, when they're doing something wrong. So
a cold shower. I've never heard you say that.
Oh, man.
Ice bath. And if you if you keep screaming, you're going in the ice. And then the hot tub.
Oh my goodness. Yikes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Should we move on or is this?
Yeah,
I mean, this
is
really, it's super hard because there are certain, I think back and there's certain situations that if I said zero spanking, I'm like, I don't know what I would have done in a situation where it wouldn't, because I think it's equally, if not more dangerous to let a tantrum go. Like building into your kid the idea that if they scream loud enough, they will get their way. Mm-hmm. That's like dangerous,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I remember it kind of clicked. I think our oldest was like 5 or 6. And I remember thinking, I asked her, would you rather a spanking or would you rather like not have dessert tonight or something? I remember it was like something. Yeah. And she right away was like, oh, I'll take the spanking. Yeah. She's like, oh, it's quick and easy, it's done. And right then and there, I'm like, well, you're not getting one. And so then I realized with her that, and with all, like, kind of carried on with all of the kids, but that you got to figure out what matters to them and what means a lot and what's a hard thing. Like, you're not going to have dessert tonight when we're going over to our friend's house, you know. And
you
that was.
You have to stick with it.
You have to stick with it. Yeah. But so anyways, I at this point, I mean, it's, you know, it's easier, like, now that we're on this end, but I would probably use every other approach as possible than spanking. So
better.
Not easy.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going here.
At least a verse, because somebody's going to ask, but, like, you know, what about the verse that says, if you withhold the rod...
Yeah,
you're not loving. So what would you say?
Well, that's what we did. We said the Proverbs command us to do this. First of all, the Proverbs aren't commands. They're more general principles of wisdom. And secondly, that's on the other side of the cross. Like, I do think there is something really theological about this question. Like, on this side of Jesus, when Jesus took our punishment, I think that does reshape even things like parenting. And so, yeah, in the Old Testament, you have things like violence and corporeal punishment and everything. But I think it's significant that it is in the Old Testament. But there's a book. There's a book written on it that talks about kind of like why things change from Old and New Testament on corporeal punishment.
Corporal. Okay, don't say that word.
Corporeal?
Anymore.
What's corporeal?
I don't know, but it's not. Okay, don't say it again. Corporal. It's like embarrassing. Everybody on the other end is thinking, that is an annoying word.
The other day I said nuclear. Oh, I said nuclear family.
Whoa.
It's nuclear. There's no. It's. Did you know that? Somebody like was laughing in the back. I'm like, why are you laughing? They said, you said nuclear family. I said, that's what it is, right? And they said, no, it's nuclear. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. I don't know.
Oh.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about sex. My wife and I are talking about kids right now, so this is prescient. What's sex like once kids are in the house? I'm really weirded out by that. How did you know you wanted to have kids? We can start with the easy one first. We both wanted kids before when we're dating.
Yeah.
That was... If you're out there and you're dating, I would make that really clear up front. And I've really talked to you too much about this. My podcast listeners know it.
What?
Well, I we don't need to dig into this too much, but I do think that marriage and sex is oriented towards having kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we've too flippantly severed kids from the making of them, you know, like we just said, oh no, sex is for pleasure. It's what married people do. It's romance. And oh yeah, if you also want to have kids, then that's, you know, a totally separate choice. I just think that way of thinking is a product of our modern day culture. Like, I mean, clearly God designed sex for procreation. And again, obviously it doesn't happen all the time. Obviously there's things like infertility or old age, whatever, but to say, no, I'm totally going to have sex and have no desire to have kids. I would say the burden of proof rests on you to say, well, wait a minute, if you are truly called to marriage, which involves sex, which is designed to be procreative, give me a reason why you would say I want to go against, and maybe you do, maybe you're like, well, we want to adopt or whatever, but yeah. So I would say if you feel called to marriage, you might also be called to having children or trying to, I don't know. And it sounds kind of Catholic, but
yeah, sounds good.
All right. All right. So how deep do we want to go here into the sex after kids are in the house? I'll let you lead. You're a little more private on this kind of stuff than I am, you think?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, let's see. I think for us, it's been not just having kids, but as they've gotten to be teenagers and we've had conversations with them. And like I said, we have open conversations about everything. So naturally they feel complete, like, ability.
When do you and dad do it? Did you last night? This morning?
Oh, which, yeah, I do say, you know, those specific questions are for me and dad and in our marriage. And so they don't need to know those kind of things, but they, you know, they want to. In fact,
they want to know.
Yeah. Well, she, really? One of them just asked, yeah, I always wonder, like, when you do, because your door's open at night. So, yeah, we, and this is where we disagree in our marriage. I'll just say it this way. Preston wants to close the door at all times, and I cannot have the door closed because I've tried so hard.
I don't understand why.
Because if there's a robber that comes into our
there's
house.
No robbers in Boise.
If a robber comes in their house, I want to be, hear it right away. I want to, hear if there's any sounds. And so me closing off my door makes me feel like I'm not protecting the kids. So it's a really hard thing for me. So that
the doors are locked.
Makes it there's really no... hard.
I'm a pacifist. What am I going to do anyway?
Well, I'll protect them. So anyway, so that's a hard thing. So yeah, we don't close our door at all times. And so it's...
So if it did happen to be closed, they'd be like, what's wrong with mom and dad? Oh, are they doing that thing? Like, I mean, it'd be weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say after having kids, that it's way more difficult.
Yeah.
Way more difficult. I mean, especially if you have little kids. Do you want to speak to that as a mom with four smaller children at home? I mean,
I think you're able to more because, I mean, our kids just went to sleep at 7:30. Desire, is definitely hard.
But when we had little kids, you'd fall asleep at 7:30.
And I think that has to be part of just your love for one another, that your commitment for one another. And that, you know, if you're just waiting around till when you feel like it or you want to, then it might not happen when you have little kids because you're tired. And by 7:30, I was ready to go to bed too. The kids were in bed at 7:30. I was ready to go to sleep at 8. So, I think just knowing that you're serving one another in that way, especially, you know, for us women to serve our husbands more in that area.
No. You good?
Yeah.
Any more? All right. Okay, my wife and I have kids ages 8. What? Five kids. What, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. My wife and I have 5 kids ages 18 to 5. What is your approach to speaking biblical truth into your children's lives? We've tried to have scheduled devotional times where we read God's word together and have discussions, but I have wondered often if this is the best approach versus something more organic. I've taken the approach that God's words are life and they are critical to our family's growth and unity, but sometimes I feel more like a Bible drill sergeant than a loving teacher. What approach do you guys have? And then there's another question that's kind of similar to this that talks about instilling faith into your kids, tips for praying with kids, even praying in kind of a glib, superficial way, like, God, we pray that you have a really fun day tomorrow, you know? Is that teaching them the true meaning of prayer and so on and so forth. So, we definitely have taken, we've kind of been all over the map on this, not really intentionally. Sometimes it's like, man, we'd love to read the Bible more, but we're just, we get tired. Life gets crazy or whatever, or kids are going different directions or I'm out of town and we woke up late, whatever. Like there's natural things in life that have, you know, that come up that make it more difficult to have the more scheduled time. But then also we would be much more on the organic rhythm of life thing to where we do spend, it's almost like there's throughout the day, there's an ongoing open conversation where God and the Bible is hopefully integrated into various aspects of life rather than kind of a scheduled time. Having said that, though, I mean, I personally would like to do more of the scheduled stuff than I typically do. I mean, you've probably been better at that than I have. But
well, I feel like when the kids were little and they went to bed at 7:30, that was it was such an easier time. I know at that time I felt like life was so busy. And now I think on this end, having more teenagers, that's when life is busy. I mean, our kids are staying up later than we are, and they want to talk late. And so, but when they were little and they're asleep at 7:30, we would do, you were really good at reading the Bible to them every night, really. I mean, you weren't traveling that much when they were little. So every night, you know, for half an hour, you just read them stories, and they loved that. And they still talk about that. And then I think it's changed now that, you know, different schedules, we have different activities at night and different, you know, kids staying up at different times and going to bed at different times. So that's made it really hard. And I think, our way of just family is more organic. So it would be, it's not really like us to like get up and have rigid, like, you know, 6:30 Bible time. And
but you last year you were doing your devotions with Kalia. Yeah, was that when she was at the public school more?
Or? Yeah. So when she, before she would go to school, we'd have a little like 15-20 minute time together. But I think it's more, it needs to, like, for us, it's just, I don't like things that I get so bored with the same thing over and over in life. So if it's just always the way, you know, this is how we always do it, for me personally, I feel like it just becomes too ritual and bored with it. So I look at each stage at different as like, oh, well, this stage, this will work, or this chapter in our life will, this will work better. I mean, the one thing I really do love praying, and I always have. So I think all throughout the day, me and the kids will just pray randomly. If we see something or if we hear something, we'll just like, let's just pray real quick, or let's pray for one another. And so it's a lot easier for me with the kids to do that and just teach them to, let's just point it back to Jesus. And then reading, when everyone was homeschooling, it was a lot easier because we would just, before we started school, we would just all read and do a little devotional. This last year, everyone was kind of going in different directions. A couple of them were in school and others in like part-time school and different things. So that's made it a little more difficult. Maybe something I think we would love to be a little bit more consistent on, but I just think there has to be some grace and just the way our life is going and where it's at, but mainly just having open conversations, you know, like,
the main goal is like, I want them to like actually love the Bible. And sometimes going about this in the wrong way could not help that. It could hinder it. You know, how many people do you know are raised in really strict, you know, Bible teaching kind of families that ended up just kind of hating the Bible, you know? And I don't know if that's, I think it's the parents' fault or anything, but I mean, yeah, the ultimate goal is that they would love Jesus and love the faith and love reading the Bible. And I'm really blown away at how much our three oldest just have taken on their own to like read almost every day and study. And this, like, it's been like a year since that really clicked for some reason.
Yeah.
What do you think that was? I mean, I'd like to think because of us, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, different things.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, last question here. How do you balance protecting children from evil in the world while still preparing them to handle that evil as an adult? Or another way to phrase it would be, how do you balance trying to give your children an innocent childhood without making them so sheltered that they can't handle the real world? This is a fantastic question. And I don't, man, this is kind of the gist of parenting here, right? I mean, this is kind of like the 30,000 foot look at that tension. I mean, just the fact that you're asking the question speaks volumes. I think this is because some people don't ask the question. They would just do one or the other. Like, no, we need to throw our kids in the world at 5 years old, and that's how you know, they become disciples. And other people, no, you need to shelter them completely, and that's how they, you know, protect them from all the evil. And we would, like, as you could probably guess, take it somewhere in the middle road generally. I mean, because we've homeschooled all of our kids at some point. Now all of them have been in public school at some point too. And now they're in a kind of a hybrid. They go to school 2 days a week and they're home the other 2 days. Fridays are off.
Yep.
We party on Fridays. So I think because we have, for the most part, homeschooled our kids most of their years, we try to offset that to some extent by talking through the world and exposing them. So we've tried to put them in different things, and or even like, I don't know, like we're fairly lenient on music and movies. I'm not as lenient as some people, actually. We're kind of in the middle of that. I mean,
yeah.
But we try to talk through, like, you know, all of our kids know culture fairly well. They know pop music. We go on mission trips. We travel a lot together. We try to expose them to the world and live in the world with them, and so that we can kind of disciple them in that. But makes it sound too good. Is that, I mean, we're just kind of shooting from the hip with a lot of this stuff. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've never been ones to shelter our kids or want to shelter the kids. So mm-hmm. We always put them in activities. They're always around other people and adults. And I mean, we don't shy away from anybody that looks different than us or maybe mm-hmm. looks edgy or anything. If anything, we kind of run straight to them if we see people, mm-hmm. So I think, but I guess our approach was that we actually want them to very much be aware of the world and love people in the world, but we want to be just their main influence in their younger years. And so that's mm-hmm. kind of why we started homeschooling, because it was just give us some extra years with them when they're younger to be as much of an influence, have as much impact in their lives as than somebody else would. And then with that, being able to just figure out life kind of together and how what it looks like.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Thanks so much, you guys, to my Patreon supporters for these wonderful questions. If you have more, you'll probably have more. They're going to be sent in because I asked you guys just under 2 days ago to submit your questions. So if you have more questions you're going to submit, I'll try to do those at a later podcast. Maybe it'll be a Patreon-only podcast or something in July. So thanks so much for your questions. Any parting words for our parents or aspiring parents out there, Chris?
No, but I was thinking with questions, if you have more questions, it would be fun to do like, what would you do and it would have to be like, we could just give real quick answers of just first thing that comes to your mind. What would you do on these circumstances? Maybe that could be kind of, because it's so much easier when you are not in this situation, to look at another person's situation and say, oh, try this or, you know, so. But yeah, I mean,
what do you do in when your kid's screaming in the store? Ice bath. All right, let's close out. Thanks for listening to Theology in the Raw. We will see you next time.